Everyone to today's internet seminar. You should be here for the Remedial Acquisition Framework, or RAF, updated overview webinar. And I'm going to turn things over to your first presenter, Barbara McDonough. Barbara?
Thank you very much. Thank you for going over all those logistics. And hello to everybody. This is Barbara McDonough. I'm Chief of the Contracts Management Branch in the Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation. And I have with me today Kate Garufi, who's our Superfund Technical Lead in our office, and also Jeannie Poovey, who's the Manager for the Program Management and Regional Coordination Service Center in our Office of Acquisition Management. So she's the contracting officer side, I'm on the program side. So welcome. We're glad everybody's here, and we hope we can get give you some additional information for what we've been up to and how we're progressing on the remedial acquisition framework. We are going to do a presentation first, and I know Jean asked you to start typing in your questions. I'm going to modify that a little bit. We found out with the last webinar that if you can wait just a little bit, we might answer your question as we go through the presentation, and that way we won't have 100 questions that may ask the same thing. They may be may have been answered. In addition, in the answers, we put in the 10-minute intermission so that we could review your questions and pick the most relevant questions that we can answer today. There will be some that we'll need to go back and all confer on, and we'll get back to you in writing. We know that we have some questions that are outstanding that we still need to answer from our previous webinar. We took a lot of that information and have been using it as we adjust and modify and improve upon the remedial acquisition framework. So you will see some of those answers coming out too in the future. With that, to the next slide. And I apologize for those of you who were on our previous webinar. Some of these slides may appear very familiar, but of course we could have brand new people here who really don't know what RAF stands for and are interested in what we're doing. So bear with us a little bit. Our current Superfund remedial acquisition model is what we call a full-service contract. It provides services that go from our initial investigations through design, through our remedial action, which is basically all manner of efforts to clean up a site, including, you know, the long-term portion after we've cleaned up the site, and the oversight of these contracts. We also have site-specific contracts where we issue kind of one contract for a particular project. We have the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that provides us with some contracting support and technical services through what we call interagency agreements. And we also have our states and tribes who do projects for us through cooperative agreements. So we have a whole suite of mechanisms that we use to clean up our sites. Next slide. Many ask, why did we change? Why are we changing up? Because you'll see some changes in our approach as we go forward. We've been doing our acquisitions the same way for the past 20 years, and it's worked very well. We recognize that. But in that time, some things have changed, both instructions coming from the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, and our federal acquisition regulations. We've been asked to reduce our high-risk contracts, which are viewed as anything that, in our language, is a cost reimbursement type contract. We've been asked to try and provide more opportunities for what is called fair opportunity or competition. We are trying to leverage strategic sourcing, which is providing contracts that can be used by a multitude of individuals, not just contracts specific to a particular office, and also that we conduct more performance-based acquisitions where we provide a little less instruction for what it is that we're looking for and ask our contractors to perform to a final requirement. So we're looking for competition throughout the life of our contracts. always we're looking for reducing our resources, both dollars and FTE. And I'm sure you're all aware that those have been going down, so we're really looking for how we can be as efficient as possible. And we continue to promote small business participation in our program. The new remedial acquisition framework here is the picture, the overview, and we'll be getting into the details of each of these boxes as we move forward. We really have, for the remedial component, three boxes: the design and engineering services suite, which will be conducting architect and engineering professional service activities from investigation through design. We anticipate this is going to be a multiple award contract with indefinite delivery type of a contract for the multiple ways we can task under that. We have the remediation environmental services suite, which is also multiple award and indefinite delivery. And this has all of our remedial cleanup services, including construction. And then we have environmental services and operations suite, which also multiple award and indefinite delivery, and does our cleanup operations. We have a variety of different types of activities that we perform, and also includes oversight. And as you see on the far right, we still have all of our other tools in our toolbox, as we call them. We have our site-specific contracts, our interagency agreements, cooperative agreements, removal contracts. We use our emergency response contracts and START, and I apologize, today I can't remember that one off the top of my head. We have regional oversight contracts and also specialty contracts. Superfund Technical Assessment Response Team is what START stands for. I'm going to try and spell out acronyms as we get to this. So as we mentioned, why are we changing? We would like to make sure that we have different suites so that we can focus on the different components of our program. We want to introduce multiple awards. We want to introduce the indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity concept so that we can select the most appropriate format for the tasking that occurs under these contracts. At this point, we have a minimum guarantee of $25,000, and we expect contractors will be competing for projects at the task order level pursuant to the fair opportunity process. And with that, I'm going to turn over to Jeannie. She's going to go over some of the other details in our program.
Okay. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jeannie Poovey. The current slide. Each suite of contracts will be procured through a single solicitation using a NAICS code of 562910. It is anticipated that the contracts will be administered nationally by a single CO for each suite. The CO could reside in either headquarters here in DC or a region or multiple regions. However, the task orders we know for sure will be competed and administered locally within the regional contracting offices. Basically, firms will submit offers, or in the case of DES, SF330s, for those regional CLINs for which they would like to be considered. A single contract will be awarded to each contractor selected, and this contract will reflect the specific CLIN or CLINs for which it was selected. In other words, Company A may hold a contract for CLIN 1, and Company B may hold a contract for CLINs 1, 2, and 3, and so on and so forth. It is anticipated that up to seven different contractors will receive awards for each CLIN for each of the three suites, with some possibly awards significantly less than seven. So I want to take a second at this time just to emphasize that even though we say up to seven awards, it is most likely not going to be seven in most cases. In fact, it could be as few as three awards for each CLIN. The ultimate number of awards will depend on the region's projected budget, anticipated workload over the next 10 years, socioeconomic goals, and the qualifications of the vendors that bid for that CLIN. Okay, now Kate will explain in more detail the requirements under DES.
Thanks, Jeannie. I'm going to be responsible for explaining the requirements for the three suites of contracts. The requirements in general have not differed much in the specific tasks associated with each contract based on the October 2014 webinar that we did. There is a little bit of overlap, so as I go through the three, I'm going to try to talk a little bit about what that overlap is and how EPA from the program side intends to leverage these contracts for our remedial work. So first, there's the Design and Engineering Services DES suite. This contract in general is going to provide professional services of a scientific architecture and engineering nature to support EPA's cleanup programs. A large majority of the work from a dollar perspective is going to be for EPA lead remedial investigation feasibility studies and designs. Since these are going to be national procurements with multiple awards, the remedial program and Superfund wanted to provide the opportunity for other programs to leverage these contracts. So although not a large, we do not intend a majority of the work to be for other programs, we do have in the statement of work the ability for EPA to leverage them for engineering evaluation cost analysis or eco activities under the removal program, also targeted brownfields assessments. One of the things that I want to make very clear to contractors that are interested in the DES suite from a requirements perspective is EPA intends to leverage performance-based acquisitions for remedial actions to the extent that we can. So this contracting paradigm, the remedial design activities, will be very specific to the project-specific requirements for the remedial action. For example, our remedial design submittals that we ask the DES contractor to do may be robust plans and specifications, or they may be support for us to develop performance work statements for remedial action. So when you see remedial design here, the scope of activities that will be defined at the task order level may vary from very engineering specific to more of a solicitation support activities. So I think that really needs to be clarified as we move into the next two suites. In addition to the EPA lead work, EPA intends to leverage the DES expertise as necessary to do responsible party oversight, and that's going to be for the full suite of remedial and to the extent that we need removal action services. So anywhere from the Superfund pipeline, from remedial investigation, design, remedial action implementation, and operation and maintenance activities. Our responsible party oversight is also going to be in the ESO suite of contracts, and the requirements specific to the oversight project will dictate which suite the program chooses to use. But I do want contractors who are interested in the DES suite to know that in the event that we need the engineering expertise present in this suite, we do have the opportunity to leverage it for oversight. Finally, we do have a bullet for general technical assistance here, which is a task under the statement of work for DES. That includes a wide range of technical services from negotiation support for our enforcement lead work to modeling type support, five-year reviews, community involvement, et cetera.
The agency's architect and engineering services will be procured following Hawks Act procedures and its implementing regulation at FAR Part 36.6. We will request technical capabilities via the electronic submission of SF330s. As previously communicated, the SF330 submissions will be electronic. EPA provided a draft version of the Microsoft Access-based SF330 form for vendor comment several months ago. Revisions were made based on that feedback, and we will be providing an updated version for further vendor review next week. During the last webinar, we indicated that we would post the revised form for review, along with answers to your questions regarding the form. However, as a result of the questions and comments received as a result of that previous webinar, as indicated by Barbara, we began new internal deliberations regarding the strategy and decided not to post the revised form until the strategy itself was finalized. We are confident that we will be able to post the form for review next week. At this time, I would prefer to refrain from taking specific questions about the SF330 today, but want to assure you that you will have 2 to 3 weeks to once again test drive the form, and during that time, you will be free to speak directly with the DES CO to discuss questions or concerns regarding the use of the form. As a little background for those who may be listening to this webinar for the first time regarding RAF, as I mentioned in an earlier webinar, the decision to use a digital form was made for several reasons, including standardization of format and data, consolidation of information into one location, and ease of review, evaluation, and updates on an annual basis. This increased efficiency will in turn mean faster evaluation times and awards for vendors, but these benefits depend on all interested vendors' usage of the digital form. Therefore, alternative formats of submittals will not be accepted. As you may recall from the last webinar, we indicated that the SF330 data for those selected vendors will be maintained in the database and used to inform EPA during the issuance of task orders under the DES contracts. I will discuss this further use in a later slide. During our initial testing of the form, you provided excellent feedback and suggestions, which our development team incorporated into the revised form. Some of the changes made to the form reflect concerns regarding the software, page limits, attachments, spacing, text boxes, and text formatting, all of which we believe have been resolved. Do please provide your feedback as soon as possible and before the deadline so that we can allow time for you to retest the form if necessary. As previously mentioned, we plan to go out with a single solicitation to support all 10 regions. Each region's requirements are represented as a CLIN. A firm may submit an offer on one or more CLINs. No preference or penalty will be afforded a firm depending on the number of CLINs proposed. I want to note a correction to the slide above. We have decided to increase the number of pages for each SF330 submission to 55, which is up from 50, according to the slide. The solicitation will allow for full and open competition, and in accordance with Section 1331 of the Jobs Act and its implementing regulations found at FAR Part 19.502-4A and the Small Business Administration Regulation 13 U.S.C. Section 125.2, contracting officers may, at their discretion, when conducting multiple award procurements using full and open competition, reserve one or more contract awards for any small business concerns. Since SBA has provided agencies the opportunity to more easily consider small businesses in a multiple award environment, EPA has chosen to utilize this option in order to increase its use of socioeconomic firms for performing remedial work in all three suites, not just the ESSA suite, which will be conducted as a small business set-aside. As mentioned earlier, each region may select up to 7 different contractors for each CLIN, with some regions possibly awarding significantly less than 7. The exact number of awards per CLIN will be based on the requirements of the individual region and the highly qualified contractor responses. All right. The plan we will follow for awarding A&E contracts is similar to the plan. The plan we will follow during the administration of the contracts as well when awarding projects through task orders. While our internal standard operating procedure is still under development as to the specific steps CPWA will follow when allowing for fair opportunity to be considered for the task orders, please know that we will apprise the vendors of our ordering process in the request for SF330s. At this time, we expect that competition for task orders will be based on the review of existing SF330 data contained in the database I mentioned earlier for all firms who hold contracts for the specific CLIN under which the project will be performed, and discussions will be held with the top-ranked firms as prescribed by FAR Part 36.6. Please note that once in a while, a region may have a specific technical capability for which, after its review of the SF330 database, the region determines the capability does not reside within the firms under its own CLIN. In this instance, the region may decide to compete the requirement under another CLIN. Additionally, a region may decide, based on its review of the SF330 database information, that its requirement is best suited for performance by a small business and will set aside the requirement for small business. The criteria used to determine suitability for a small business will be based upon socioeconomic goals and project-specific requirements, such as project magnitude, technical complexities, and expertise necessary for execution of the specific project. Note, the set-aside competitions will be subject to the limitations of subcontracting requirements in FAR Part 19. Kate will now talk to you about the RES requirements.
Thanks, Jeannie. The second suite that we're going to be talking about is the Remediation Environmental Services RES suite. Basically, this contract's going to be used to execute remedial or removal action services. This contract will be a service contract with large construction components in it. So as I stated before in the sub-bullet, Basically, what we're using this contract for is to execute remedial actions, and if removal would like to use the contracts, we can also execute removal actions under them. It's important to note we do have a suite of contracts available in the regions called ERS contracts that are used for removals, both emergency and non-emergency type removal actions. We do not intend to leverage the RES suite for emergency response that will still reside under the ERS suite of contracts. We also envision removal at this point to predominantly still continue to leverage the ERS contracts. So for purposes of scoping this contract, we're really focusing on the Superfund remedial program. In order to support the successful execution of remedial action projects under the Superfund program, the statement of work for RES also includes field work and analytical support, so data collection and working with our FASTAC hierarchy for analytical services and data validation will be included under this contract. Without getting into too much detail about EPA lead remedial actions, in addition to executing the construction of a lot of our long-term remedies that require operation, based on the specific goals of the remedy, the RES contractor may be also asked to do some remedy operation, either to operate it until it meets a cleanup level or to operate it for a period of time until it could be transitioned to the ESO contract, which we'll talk about as the next suite of contracts. For folks that are familiar with environmental remediation, the types of activities that we do range in a broad spectrum of service-dominant remedies, so in-situ chemical oxidation, thermal remedies, bioremediation remedies, to remedies that are pretty heavy in construction, such as the execution of or building of landfill caps. And a lot of remedies sort of end up in between having components of service and construction. As we alluded to in the beginning, one of the premises under this contract is, under this, these suites of contracts, is to leverage performance-based acquisitions to the extent that we can. For remedies, remedial actions that do have a lot of service requirements, we will look to leverage performance-based acquisitions and, as such, give you, the contractors, the flexibility to come in with innovative approaches to execute our work and meet our performance objectives. So although the RES suite of contracts will be used for remedial actions with a lot of heavy construction, when we do have a lot of service components, there will be some engineering or design support that will inherently have to be conducted under this contract. So that type of support and expertise will be looked for when we're evaluating contractors' capabilities for this suite. Before I move on to the next slide, one of the things that I wanted to mention is I talked about the service-heavy remedies, the in-situ chemical oxidation, bioremedies being executed under the RES suite of contracts. We also, due to the way that EPA defines remedy operation and fund lead groundwater restoration activities, there is some overlap in the in-situ remedy arena in the ability for us to execute them under the RES suite or the ESO suite. It's really going to depend on the specific remedy requirements and whether it makes more sense for us to execute it under one vehicle as opposed to beginning it under the RES suite and then transferring it under the ESO suite. A great example there would be in-situ bioremediation, where we're injecting some type of amendment into the subsurface for 10 or 15 years instead of doing the first round of injections under RES and then transferring it for long-term operation under ESO. We may choose to do it under ESO exclusively. So when you read the statement of work for RES and ESO, remedy operation is under both, and that's to provide us with the flexibility to do what makes sense from a contractual standpoint.
Okay. As with DES, we plan to go out with a single solicitation to support all 10 regions. Each region is grouped into one of three CLINs as shown on the chart. A firm may submit an offer on one or more CLINs. As we elected to do with DES, the solicitation for RES will allow for full and open competition, and in accordance with Section 1331 of the Jobs Act, again, we will reserve one or more contract awards within each CLIN for small business concerns. As mentioned earlier, the EPA may select up to 7 different contractors for each CLIN, with some regions possibly awarding significantly less than 7. In most instances, the task order award pursuant to the fair opportunity procedures will be based upon best value determination. The task order team will develop a statement of work for the project. The team will determine the appropriate task order type and best value procurement approach for the task order. It will also define evaluation criteria for the project and may conduct a preliminary COI screen. The task order team will follow the established RES fair opportunity process and in accordance with FAR 16505 by providing the statement of work and evaluation criteria for the project to the vendors and requesting technical and cost proposals from the firms. Upon receipt of the proposals, the task order team will conduct a detailed review of the technical and cost information provided and may conduct the COI screen at this time if not done earlier. A summary of the team's technical review and final award recommendation will be provided to the CO, who will then award the task order in accordance with the procurement method selected. The firm awarded the task order will be required to certify that it does not have a conflict of interest with the requirement it will perform. During the formulation of a requirement, the region may decide that its requirement is best suited for performance by a small business and will then set aside the requirement for small business. The criteria used to determine suitability for a small business will be based upon socioeconomic goals and project-specific requirements, such as project magnitude, technical complexities, expertise necessary for execution of the specific project. In the case, the region may elect to set aside the requirement for competition among small businesses only. Note, any small business set-asides will be subject to the limitations of subcontracting requirements, as mentioned earlier. Additionally, the agency recognizes that occasionally a region may identify the need to award the remedial action implementation project to the firm that provided design support under DES. In this rare circumstance, the award will require the approval of the head of the agency or authorized representative in accordance with FAR Part 36. And one last important note, like with DES, there may be an occasion where the region may need to look outside its own CLIN to obtain unanticipated or unique services from qualified firms in another region's CLIN. Now, Kate's going to cover the requirements of the SO suite.
Thanks, Jeannie. The third suite is the Environmental Services and Operations suite. This is going to provide professional services to support EPA's cleanup programs, including and primarily to implement EPA lead remedy operation, including fund lead long-term response actions, or LTRA, at Superfund sites. As I alluded to before in the RES slide, the remedy operation really is a broad range of activities that could be done under this task. For example, the RES contractor may be used to construct a pump and treat system, operate it for a year, and then it would be transferred to the ESO contractor to provide services to continue to operate that remedy for a period of up to 10 years, which is considered the LTRA. Conversely, long-term remedy operation may be the injection of chemical or biological amendments into the subsurface as part of a fund lead long-term response action. This may, under EPA terms, be called an RA and an LTRA. As I alluded to before, if the remedy is exclusively the injection of that amendment, it may not be executed on the RES contract. Instead, it would be executed under the ESO contract for us to find some inherent benefits with continuity of services through those rounds of injections. Because we're looking for services to support these wide range of EPA lead remedy operation activities, there's a need for us to have a engineering and scientific expertise in this contracting suite to be able to not only execute the pump and treat operation or the injection of in-situ amendments, but also be able to evaluate data and make recommendations for EPA for subsequent injection activities or optimization activities, et cetera. So you will see under the remedy operation task there that we do provide for engineering and science support for that activity. So we're not just looking for contractors who operate pump and treat systems. We are looking for that science and engineering expertise in order to do conceptual site models and make changes that we see with these types of in-situ remedies. In addition to the remedy operation, we also are looking for EPA support to perform preliminary assessment and site investigation activities. There's two more activities that we're predominantly going to be doing under the ESO suite. The first one is technical support to EPA in overseeing potentially responsible parties. I talked about that task under the DES suite of contracts. As I alluded to in DES, the nature of the oversight is going to depend on the type of work and the specific requirements for the project. In the event that the expertise that resides in the DES contract is not explicitly needed, the ESO suite can be leveraged to do a competitive task order competition to get the services necessary to perform that function. In addition to that, EPA's contracting, going from the RAC contracts to the three suites of contracts, EPA is no longer executing remedial action projects through the RAC contractor, aka using the RAC contractor for construction management expertise. EPA is starting to take that expertise in-house. Given that we're ramping up our abilities and capabilities to provide that service, the EPA RPM or EPA entity that's going to be providing on-site construction management or remedial action support is going to, in a lot of cases, need some contractor support to help with quality assurance, day-to-day tracking, et cetera. The ESO suite of contracts, in the event that RES is used for this function, we plan to leverage the ESO suite to provide technical support to the EPA entity in the field overseeing the RES contractor. So those are the main components of the ESO suite. In addition to that, there are technical assistance requirements, monitoring that can be leveraged under this, document review, five-year reviews, et cetera. They'll all be outlined in the statement of work that goes out with the RFP. Jeannie?
Okay, thanks, Kate. As with DES and RES, the agency will issue a single solicitation to support all 10 regions. I know I sound like a broken record, but I wanted to be extra clear here that exactly how we're doing things. Each region is grouped into one of three CLINs, as shown on the chart. And as with the other suites, a firm may submit an offer on one or more CLINs as they desire. However, with the ESO, unlike DES and RES, which will be procured as full and open solicitation, ESO will be a 100% small business set aside. I would like to mention here that firms submitting offers as joint ventures must both be small businesses in order to qualify for consideration under this solicitation. Like DES and RES, each region may select up to seven different contractors for each CLIN. However, we want to emphasize this does not mean we will necessarily award seven. Okay, the ESO task order award process. In most instances, the task order award pursuant to the fair opportunity procedures will be based upon a best value determination. The task order team will develop a statement of work for the project. The team will determine the appropriate task order type and best value procurement approach for the task order, and it will also define evaluation criteria for the project and may conduct a preliminary COI screen, very much like the RES procedures. So I won't repeat everything word for word. But additionally, the agency recognizes that occasionally the region may identify a need to award the remedial action implementation project to a firm that provided design support under DES, just like RES. And in this circumstance, again, the award will require the approval of the HCA or authorized representative. And also, as with DES and RES, there may be the occasion where the region may need to look outside its own CLIN to obtain unanticipated or unique services from qualified firms in another region's CLIN of contractors. Who can participate in the RAF? In the framework, we have tried to leave open as many options as possible for you. Therefore, vendors may bid on any of the suites, on any of the CLINs, as both as a single prime, a joint venture prime partner, or as a subcontractor. Now Barbara will talk about our plans to transition.
Okay. We in EPA have reviewed all of our existing contractors to look at for their period of performance and the number of projects we've got on them and the lifeline or the timeline for those projects, and have created an acquisition forecast for each of our regions. We've looked at when is a good point for these projects to off-ramp, as we say, from our existing RACs to our new design, the remediation, and the environmental services contracts. We anticipate that we're going to be relying on our existing vehicles, and I want everybody to pay close attention there to either through contract extensions or interagency agreements with the Corps of Engineers during this transition period. We don't intend to have a lapse in coverage. We'd like to keep all of our projects and our Superfund efforts ongoing. If you have a contract that's expiring in the next year, you can be assured that we're taking steps to ensure continuity in our projects. So if you have additional questions or you're concerned about where your particular contract stands, we're going to ask you to call the contracting officer for the various contracts to get additional information.
Okay.
With that, I'm turning it back to Jeannie.
Thanks, Barbara. You are all aware that the agency has experienced delays in implementing the new framework, and we appreciate your patience with us as we try to develop the most effective plan for all parties. The award teams are busy developing our requirements documents and are working towards releasing them in these approximate timeframes. Unless the comments we receive from you as a result of today's webinar inform us otherwise, we will not issue another draft of the request for SF330s. While you are testing the electronic SF330 form, the DES award team will be finalizing the final version of the request and will incorporate the final SF330 form with that request. The SF330 form will have been revised again if necessary per your feedback from today's webinar and the most recent testing. We expect to issue draft solicitations for RES and SO later in the summer. Until now, we have endeavored to keep all three suites on the same timeline in order to keep you fully informed on all three simultaneously. Now that the framework and its acquisition strategy are established, it is our intent from this point forward to allow each of the requirements to assume its own timeline. Consequently, communications unique to each requirement will be provided by the contracting officer for each suite through the links provided on the following slide. And I know that Jean has already directed you to those, and that's our main means of communication from this point forward, unless we find another reason to have a joint webinar with all of it. So here are the three requirements. Back to you, Jean.
Okay, thank you. So at this point, I believe we're going to take a short break for our period where we're going to start reviewing some questions. So bear with me, guys. I'm going to get our timers here set up. And we are going to take a 10-minute intermission here. And during that time, our organizers and presenters will review questions and comments that have been submitted. When we resume or come back from this 10-minute break, we'll then begin reading questions out loud so that the presenters can start to answer them. We do have hundreds of questions in the queue, so we may not necessarily get through all of the questions that have been submitted today, but I do want to encourage participants, if you have not yet submitted your questions, please, you may continue to do so using that Q&A window which appears in the lower right corner of your screen. While we are on our short break, the phone lines will remain open, the webinar will remain open, but you guys will hear silence over the next 9.5 minutes while we're on break. So feel free to keep sending in questions and comments, and we will resume with our Q&A portion in approximately 9 minutes. Okay, it looks like we have reached the end. Start our question and answer portion of the webinar today. So we're going to start reading questions and comments out loud that have been submitted by participants. As I noted, the Q&A window is open in the lower right corner of your screen. If anyone is in the middle of typing up a question or comment, you may continue to do so. We're going to try to get through as many questions as we can in the time that's allotted today. So unfortunately, we may not be able to answer everything that gets submitted, but again, I want to encourage you to try to share your thoughts and comments if you do have them using that Q&A window in the lower right corner. So let me turn back and confirm if my presenters are back on the lines. So Jeanette, Jeannie, Kate, Barbara, are you guys still there on the phones?
We're still here.
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and get started and begin reading out some of these questions. So the very first question that we're going to take starts off, if a contractor is awarded a DES contract, will that contractor be conflicted out of winning an RES contract?
No, it will not be.
Okay. All right. Does the EPA have a minimum number of small business awards per CLIN for the DES and the RES?
No.
Okay, excellent. Just walking right through these questions. Let's move on to the very next one. Can we talk a bit more about RA oversight? And this participant would like clarification if the RA oversight support has been removed from the DES SOW.
Jean, this is Kate. I want to go back to the first question really quick,
sure.
Which asks if the DES contractor will be conflicted out from winning an RES contract. And I'd like Jeannie to provide a little more information on the contract level versus the task order level.
Okay, so this is Jeannie. The clarification is that a DES contractor will not necessarily be conflicted out from being awarded an RES contract. However, it may be conflicted out at the task order level for a specific project that it might have been the designer on.
Thanks, Jeannie.
All right.
Now, the next question was the RA oversight. We're calling mm-hmm. that RA implementation support task. We envision the majority of the RA implementation support will be executed by the ESO contractor. We do still have it in the DES contract to provide our regions with the flexibility to leverage the expertise that they feel is necessary. I want to clarify that in the event that our DES contractor does more of what I will call prescriptive plans and specifications as a deliverable during the design, we do have the ability for post-RD support or retaining the designer during construction to sort of provide that design expertise, answer any questions related to plans and specs, make modifications, et cetera. So it's really going to depend on what we define as the role of the designer during construction as to how we, I guess, scope that specific project and whether it goes under DES or ESO. But again, RA implementation support as EPA envisions it is project manager help in the field, not necessarily designer support during RA. Those are two separate things. But again, RA implementation support to provide EPA with flexibility is in both contracts, with EPA expecting to use the ESO contract predominantly for that function.
All right, excellent. Thank you. So I have a follow-on question regarding small businesses, and one of the participants wants to know, how will EPA determine the number of small business awards to reserve per CLIN?
This is Jeannie. The answer to that is that we will determine the number of small businesses based on the requirements of the individual region and the qualified vendors that come in under that particular CLIN.
Okay, excellent. All right, we're going to look a little bit at large businesses, and one participant asks, can a large business be eligible for a DES or DES contract award as both a prime and also as an 8A mentor protege JV partner in the same CLIN?
If a contractor wants to bid under each of those different categories, it is welcome to do so.
Okay. And then I believe we have here a follow-on question. And this is just asking if EPA can confirm and clarify why two firms that form a JV for ESO must both be small businesses. So while we're waiting, I'll repeat that question. They'd like to know if EPA can confirm and clarify why two firms that form a JV for ESO must both be small businesses. And while we're getting our presenters together to formulate their reply, again, if any of the participants are still interested in sharing questions and comments, again, we do have that Q&A window in the lower right corner of your screen. We will attempt to get through as many questions and comments as we can in the time allotted today, but we may not be able to address all of the questions just due to sheer volume with the time that we have allotted.
Okay. All right, this is Jeannie. We're ready to answer the last question.
Okay.
In order for the agency to get full credit as 100% business set aside, both companies need to be small in size.
Okay, let's take a quick look here at the period of performance. Our participant next up in the queue asks, will 10 years be the period of performance for each suite?
Yes.
Okay. And the very next question, will the small businesses be competing with the large businesses on TOs, I believe, or task orders?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Our next question, and this one is taking a look at the statement of work. And this is small business and other businesses. The participant would like to know if there is no difference between the SOW to be performed by small businesses and other than small businesses for the DES and RES suites. And since two or more small businesses can perform all of the SOW, why is the entire work not being set aside solely for small business?
Okay, this is Jeannie. At this time, we have no market research that would demonstrate that at least two or more small businesses can perform the majority of the statement of work requirement.
Okay. We have a question under the RES. Is there a limit on the number of CLINs that a contractor can win? Is it possible to receive an award for all three geographic CLINs?
Yes.
Yes and yes? So there's no limit?
Yes and yes, if they are deemed to be qualified to do so.
Okay. All right. I'm going to, and it looks like we had another similar under DES. Is there a limit on the number of CLINs that a contractor can win? And the answer to that is no, there is no limit.
Right.
Correct?
Correct.
Okay. We're going to switch over to the RES. Will RES contracts have bonding requirements? And again, the question, will the RES contracts have bonding requirements?
Jean, this is Kate. I'm going to give a generic answer at this point. The statement of work for RES is very generic. Again, the requirements are going to be defined at the task order level. For those requirements that include elements of construction, the CO will evaluate those requirements and make a determination on the bonding that will be set for that specific requirement. So the bonding will be task order specific based, again, on the nature of the requirements.
All right. Thank you. We do have a few other questions here in terms of how these RFPs will go out. Our next participant asks, will the RFP call for proposals by zone or by individual regions?
It will be the solicitation will ask for proposals according to CLIN, which in the case of DES is a single CLIN for each region, and for RES and ESO, it'll be the CLINs as designated in the PowerPoint presentation, which is CLIN 1 will be regions 1, 2, 3, CLIN 2 is 4, 5, 6, 7, and CLIN 3 is 8, 9, 10.
Okay. This is Kate. Jean, this is Kate. I want to add further just to clarify. In total, there's three suites of contracts. There will be one request for SF330s, where a contractor will decide if they're proposing on one CLIN, two CLINs, or 10 CLINs. So it's one request for SF330s that includes all 10 clints. Okay? Then there's one request for proposals for the ESO National Suite. Again, there's three clins, so a contractor will submit one proposal or three, depending on the clins, the same for RES. So we're not sending out RFPs or requests for SF330s that are clin specific. It's three national contracts, therefore three RFPs or SF330s.
Okay. And we're going to go back. I have a number of questions relating to the SF330s, but I'm going to hold those and ask them together. So we're going to take one more question here about the numbers of awardees and clins. So referencing slide number 10, one participant says that slide 10 says that up to seven awardees will be made per clin, but it also says that a number of awards are reserved for small businesses. Does this mean that more than seven awardees per clin, in other words, seven awardees plus some small businesses on top per clin, or will the small businesses be evaluated in with the large businesses for those seven slots?
Okay, the answer is the latter option, in that the small businesses will be evaluated along with the large businesses as afforded by 1331 that we mentioned earlier. And the number of contract awards up to seven, which again I remind you is not necessarily going to be seven, will include both large and small.
All right, fantastic. We're going to, again, before we jump into the SF330 questions, someone would like to know exactly how much time will be given to respond to the DES RFP.
At this point in time, it'll be the standard amount of time, and it'll be anywhere from 30 to 45 days.
Okay. And let's take a look at another clarifying question about small businesses. And this participant asks, can you clarify if a small business can be the prime on the ESO suite with a large business as a subcontractor? This is not a joint venture arrangement, but a teaming arrangement where the small business is the prime and the large business is a sub.
Jean, can you please repeat the question?
So they're asking if a small business could be the prime contractor on the ESO suite and have a large business as their subcontractor. And they very specifically state that this is not a joint venture, but a teaming arrangement where the small business is the prime and the large business is their sub.
Okay, absolutely, a small business could be the prime and a large business could be a subcontract, but just keep in mind, because this is 100% small business set aside under ESO, the small business would have to be able to demonstrate that it could perform at least 50% of the work.
All right, excellent. All right, I believe we're going to do one more question here and then start looking at, just a few more small business related ones, and then we're going to switch over to the SF330 related questions. We have a question here and asks, will the EPA use LPTA as the best value selection procedure per FAR Section 15101-2 to select the RES contractors for each task order within CLINS?
Okay, this is Jeannie. The answer is it'll either be LPTA or trade-off.
Or trade-off, okay. Excellent, thank you. Another question going back to small businesses. This person states that as a small business contractor that is interested in submitting on both the RES and ESO, they're asking if you could stagger the submittals of the RES and ESO response so that they'll have a fair opportunity to pursue both of these suites. Is that something you're willing to consider?
Yes, we have considered that, and by virtue of the fact that we intend to put each of them on their own track at this point in time, it is very likely that the issuance of the solicitations for ERES and ESO would be at different times.
Okay. We have a large...
Therefore, the receipt of proposals would also be at different times.
Okay. We have a large business question, and someone wants to know if a large business RES contractor will be allowed to self-perform construction, or will they have to subcontract similar to the current RAC, or RAC contract?
It's up to the large business. It may self-perform the construction if it wants to.
Okay. All right. right. We have questions about interagency agreements. And again, I do have a whole slew of SF-330 questions. We will turn to those in just a moment. Participants can continue to submit their questions and comments using that Q&A window, which appears in the lower right corner of your screen. If you're having any technical difficulties submitting questions electronically in Adobe Connect, you can certainly send them to me via email. If you're following along on just the phone lines, again, it's ballot.gene@epa.gov. All right, so turning back to this interagency agreement question. One of the participants states that you reference the interagency agreements will be utilized during the transition from the RACs, the RACs, to RAFs, RAFs. After the transition occurs, will the U.S. EPA continue to utilize interagency agreements with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers? For example, will the Army Corps of Engineers continue to put out contracts in support of the Superfund program?
This is Kate. We intend to leverage the Corps of Engineers to do our complex remedial projects consistent with how we've leveraged them since the inception of the program. The Corps of Engineers makes decisions on how they will execute our work contractually, whether they put out suites of contracts or do site-specific procurements. I can't really answer that. But we do intend to use them as a tool in our toolbox moving forward.
Okay. Some of the participants are looking for some clarification in how you developed the CLINs. They ask if you could discuss the thought process behind combining regions for the ESO and RES CLINs. Was that also considered for the DES? And if so, why didn't you take the same approach for all three suites? So again, they're looking for clarification on why the regions were combined into the CLINs the way they were for the ESO and RES suites, and why didn't you take that same approach with the DES?
Jean, I don't think we're going to answer that question at this time. That's a long story. We'll answer that in writing.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. All right. Let's go ahead and start looking at some of our SF-330 questions. Again, people can continue to submit questions on any area or topic. There's no reason to restrict them for now. I've just sort of been grouping them in somewhat related areas to read out loud. We'll continue to read through questions and try to address them as we can in the time that we have allotted today. So let me delve into some of the SF-330 questions here. The very first question asks if the SF-330 for this procurement will still be submitted electronically using Microsoft Access and FedConnect. And if that's the case, will a draft version of the SF-330 database be released prior to the solicitation of the DES?
Okay, yes, we will still require the submission of electronic SF-330, and by next week we will have posted up on the DES website a revised form for the vendor community to test drive. And you will have approximately 2 to 3 weeks to test it and give feedback to EPA on its usability and any suggestions you might have for improvement during that time.
All right, excellent. On that, related to that, will you be releasing revised SF-330 instructions prior to the solicitation of the DES?
The only revised instructions that we would submit would be pertaining to the actual completion of the SF-330 form itself. If there's anything that we feel that has deviated significantly from the previous instructions, we will post them at that same time and not wait for the issuance of the request for SF-330s.
Okay. We have a question getting into the page limits for the SF-330s, and this question asks, for the DES SF-330s, is the 55-page limit only for Part 1, or is it for the entire package, so Parts 1 and 2?
That would be the entire package.
Okay. And in your new instructions for the DES SF-330, will EPA specify key personnel roles, for example, a quality manager, that the respondents must provide?
EPA will be providing guidance on that, yes.
And for the DES, will offerors submit a separate SF-330 for each CLIN that they are interested in? And they just clarify and say that if that's the case, that could result in substantial duplication of effort for contractors who are vying for multiple CLINs.
Yes, we did think long and hard about that question earlier, and we have concluded that we do need to have a separate submission for every CLIN that the contractor is interested in.
Okay. All right. Do contractors have to respond to the SF-330 first in order to respond to solicitations later?
If the questioner is asking if they have to submit a proposal or an SF-330 for DES in order to participate in the RES and SO solicitations, no, they do not.
Okay, thank you. And if participants have additional clarifying questions based off of some of the responses we're giving now, again, that Q&A window is still open. We do have another question here on the 330 format. Will proposals for RES and ESO be made with the SF-330 format?
No.
Okay. Another participant would like you to restate if the SF-330 and draft RFP time frame for each of the three suites. So they just wanted to be very clear exactly what is the timeline for the 330 and the draft RFP for each of those three suites.
At this point in time, we're not in a position to clarify with that level of specificity. The time frames that I gave for the release of the request for SF-330s was approximate, and the release of the draft solicitations for RAS and SO are also approximate.
Okay. So I'm going to go to some other questions that look back at businesses and the CLINs. Our next question asks, will a single evaluation panel review submittals for all CLINs, or will there be separate evaluation panels for each CLIN that is established? And again, we're looking to see if a single evaluation panel will review submittals for all of the CLINs, or will separate evaluation panels for each CLIN be established?
This is Jeannie. The answer is there will be unique evaluation boards for each suite of contracts.
Okay, thank you. Within each CLIN, would EPA allow two awards to a team that proposes as a large business with a small business partner and to the same team with the small business partner as the lead? So we heard a variation. Can we have the small business be the prime and the large business be the sub? Now, in this case, we're kind of extending that and say within each CLIN, can EPA have two awards to a team that proposes that large business with a small business partner, sort of swapping out those roles?
That is a business decision that the firm needs to make on its own.
Okay. One participant would like to ask if the ERS contractor can be conflicted out of participating on the RES.
No, the ERS contractors are not prohibited, are not conflicted out. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right, we're going to get into a question regarding slide number 14. And this question asks that on that slide you stated that in rare instances the region may identify the need to award the RA implementation project to the entity that provided design support. Can you provide some examples of what those instances would be?
Jean, this is Kate. I'll try to explain this. Under Part 36, there's two ways to execute design and construction. There's the design build approach, two-step design build process, and then there's the design bid build process, where the entity that does the design is separate but from the entity that implements. The only time that can happen in a design build bid build paradigm where the designer is the same entity that does the remedial action implementation would be with the head of contracting approving it. So I would say I can't really give an example right now as to a situation where that would arise. I would say because the FAR allows for the HCA approval in the rare instance, we wanted to include it in the slide, but we really don't envision it happening, especially since we're going to have a slew of entities available under DES and RES to do the work.
All right, excellent. Thank you. We do have a question asking for a clarified definition of small business. Can you clarify exactly who you're talking about when you use the phrase small business? Are these 500 employee or less businesses? Is the small business designation based off of revenue? So can you define who would meet that qualification of small business?
The answer is that it's according to the NAICS code, and in this case, it's under 500 employees.
All right, excellent. Thank you very, very much. And let's see, we've got a few more questions coming in, and this next one is going to take us back to that SF-330 page requirement. Just to clarify, if contractors choose to bid on more than one CLIN, will a separate SF-30 be required for each CLIN with a 55-page limit?
Yes.
Okay. All right, we're going to take another question. Can you confirm, please, that both the DES and RES will be competed under full and open competition with reserves for small business, and that ESO will be restricted at a 100% business set aside only?
That is correct.
Okay, so the DES and RES are going to be competed under full and open competition with reserves for small businesses, and it's only the ESO that will be restricted to a 100% small business set aside.
That is correct.
All right. Given that the bonding may be required on RES task orders, will EPA require each offeror to prove their bonding capacity as part of their proposal?
Yes. As a matter of responsibility, they will be required to do that.
If the top seven rated firms on a CLIN are all large businesses, does that mean that there will not be any small business awards for that particular CLIN?
At this point in time, we can't answer that.
Okay. It looks like we have a few more questions coming into the queue, and again, I do appreciate all of the participants who have been sharing their questions and comments today. We are going to continue reading through a few more of them and try to answer what we can in the time that we have allotted. If you typed in a question but haven't necessarily heard it or received a response to it, don't worry. We have gotten it into the queue. We just have many, many, many questions that are coming in from the live audience, so I want to be sure everybody knows we are getting the questions and we are trying to get through what we can in the time that we have allotted today. So you can continue to type up comments and questions in that Q&A window in the lower right corner of your screen, and I'm going to continue to read a few more of those out loud. Our next question gets into small business contracting, and this person would like to know what type of small business contracting requirements will be made of the large businesses.
Can you please repeat that, Jean?
So they worded it, what type of small business contracting requirements will be made of large businesses? I believe they're asking, are you going to require that the large business sub out a certain percentage or a certain portion of their work to small businesses? Will the small businesses have to contract out a certain percentage to large businesses if they can't handle capacity?
Okay, so to answer the first part of the question for large businesses, we still will have the requirements for subcontracting plans, in which case the contractors will have to state in there what their small business goals are, as in any other procurement. As far as small goes, we don't have requirements for subcontracting plans, except when it's a small business set aside, then they would be required to perform at least 50% of the work as the small business. Okay, and then can we go back to one or two questions back, Jean, that you had asked about the reserves, small business reserves? Could you repeat that again, please? I don't think I gave a complete answer.
Okay, I will have to circle back to that in a minute once I mark it as an answered question. It takes me just a minute to find it back here in my queue.
I could try to answer it, but I want to make sure I get it completely.
Okay. So what I think I'm actually going to do is go back to some of the open ones, and then while you're responding to that, I'm going to circle back to the one that you had asked about small business reserves, if that's okay with you.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to look first at this next question about the DES SF-330 submittals. In evaluating the DES SF-330 submittals, will EPA consider qualifications of team subcontractors in addition to the qualifications of each proposed prime? Or will you give more weight to the prime's qualifications rather than the sub's qualifications?
We will be evaluating the SF-330s the way we always have, and it will be evaluating the team that's proposed.
Okay. And so there's no weights given to the prime more than the sub?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. Will all contracts for all CLINs be awarded at the same time for DES? And then that same question for the RES and ESO.
All awards will be made simultaneously within each suite of contracts.
Okay. And then this next question is asking in terms of, this gets to your response on whether or not a separate proposal is required for each CLIN. And this participant would like to know if you can clarify that response. She said that one speaker seemed to indicate that a separate proposal was required for each CLIN, and then another speaker seemed to indicate that a single proposal would be required in response to each suite with an indication by the offerer of which CLIN they are bidding on. So to them, it's important to know if we're submitting three proposals, one for each suite, or a maximum of 16 proposals, one for each CLIN. So can you clarify whether or not or when separate proposals are required for each CLIN?
Jean, I can answer that because this is Kate.
Okay.
I think I caused the confusion. My bad. If each a proposal or an SF-330 must be submitted unique to each CLIN under which you want to propose. So for RES, if you want to propose on all three CLINs, you submit three distinct proposals targeted to each CLIN. For DES, it's one up to 55-page SF-330 per CLIN that you want to propose.
Okay. So I'm going to move on to this very next question in response to the time period to actually respond. So a 45 to 60-day response period is recommended given that contractors may have to write several proposals to bid on several CLINs. So they're just asking, I think, for a comment on that. Again, it says 45 to 60-day response team is recommended given that contractors may have to write several proposals to bid on several CLINs.
The suggestion is noted, and we will take it under consideration. Thank you.
Okay. And then I think we have a clarifying question looking at the panels to review. We do have one participant who thinks that the intention of their original question was somehow missed and that they really were trying to get at the panels that were going to be reviewing these individual submissions, if it was going to be one panel that was reviewing everything, or would each CLIN have its own panel? And they want you to provide clarification on that, if you can. So, for example, for the DES, will there be a separate panel for each CLIN, or just one panel for all 10 CLINs?
Okay, sorry for the delay in answering that question. At this point in time, as you can see, EPA is still deliberating on the answer to that question. We have been tossing around one single AEB versus multiple AEBs, and once that decision's made, that will be won't necessarily be communicated out to this community, but we will we'll follow that procedure.
Okay. All right. We do have a question asking if REPA, REPA contractors are conflicted out of the RAF contracts.
No, they're not conflicted out.
Okay. And we do have another clarifying question, and this is getting back to which opportunities will require SF330s. So can you state very clearly which opportunities between the DES, RES, and ESO will require SF330 submittals?
Can you please repeat the question, Jean?
Can you please clarify which opportunities, and this is of the DES, RES, and ESO, will require SF330 submittals? So do all three of them require SF330s? Is it just one of them?
Okay, the answer is there only the DES requirement will require submission of the SF330s. The other two require proposals, cost and technical proposals.
Okay. Will the DES, SOW, and evaluation criteria be available before the SF330 release?
Typically, the evaluation criteria is included in the request for SF330s, and in this case, that will be they will be included as well.
Okay. Are there any small business set-asides in the DES and RES?
According to the Jobs Act, we are allowed to go full and open and reserve the right to award a certain number of small business contracts. So, no, we will not be setting aside at the contract level. However, we will be reserving the right to set aside for small business requirements at the task order level.
Okay. And then there's another clarifying question here about what you expect people to identify in some of their submittals. Are you expecting large businesses to name specific subcontractors or just that they plan to subcontract to certain entity types as part of their proposal?
They need to complete the subcontracting plan requirements, which would require them to name the subcontractors.
Okay. All right. We're going to go ahead and continue to invite participants here to submit their questions and comments in using that Q&A window. I'm going through and refreshing my view of some of these questions. So to submit your questions and comments, you just need to type them into that box in the lower right corner of your screen. Looks like we have some clarifying questions about the ESO scope of work that are coming up here in the queue. One participant asks if you can clarify the ESO scope of work. The September 2014 draft scope indicates that ESP may include not only LTRA, but also oversight, fund lead RIFS, RD, and RA activities. Today's presentation seems to indicate that the ESO will be limited to LTRA, RA oversight, and PA/SI activities.
All right, this is Kate. I'll answer that question. The DES contract is the contract vehicle that will be used for most RIFS and RD pieces of work. That being said, there may be some instances where we need a streamlined, focused RI work or maybe a feasibility study or a treatability study piece that could be executed under ESO. We are not precluded from using that vehicle. Since that vehicle is not a Part 36 procurement, the competition process is a little bit different. We may want to leverage more direct competition to execute some of the limited RI work or maybe some pieces of design support. So I would say, in general, design, DES. RIFS, DES. ESO, LTRA, and remedy operations. So for purposes of where we're going to be doing the work, that's where the majority of it will reside.
Okay. We have another participant who would like to know if you can clarify if an ESO contractor can be permitted to perform design and RA activities on the same site.
Okay. Again, this is a design, bid, build type structure of contracting. As I alluded to in the DES contract, design is not necessarily, in all cases, full-blown plans and specifications. If EPA chooses to do more of a pure performance specification, for instance, if we want to do thermal remediation, we may do a quote-unquote design that develops a performance work statement with performance metrics, such as time and temperature. In that case, we would call that the design for purposes of executing the remedial action. when we do performance-based specifications, obviously when we go and do the remedial action, in this case under ESO, if you want to follow your example, the contractor will obviously be doing some design work inherent to providing a solution to meet the performance work statement that we do under a performance-based acquisition. So in that case, the designer, the DES contractor, would be supporting EPA in the performance-based acquisition development or the performance work statement, and the ESO contractor would be executing. So they would be doing the remedial action implementation, not the design, although they will be doing design work. I know that's confusing, but that's how we can leverage performance-based acquisitions for our service-type remedial actions as opposed to a full-blown design.
All right, excellent. We have just a few more questions here.
Confusing, but that's how. Hey, Jean, we have a clarification on one of the questions.
Okay.
Okay, this is Jeannie. I just want to correct an answer that I gave earlier regarding the SF-330 page limitation.
Okay.
The DES contracting officer has corrected me, and that is the 55-page limit pertains to Part 1 only. It is not for both parts, just Part 1 only.
Okay, thank you. So, again, that clarification is for the 55-page limit. It references only Part 1 of your submittal package, not the entire package. All right, thank you very, very much, Jeannie. And we will have time to go back to the other question you had asked about earlier in just a moment. I'm going to take a few more questions that are still sitting here in my queue. And this next question, it's coming back to clarify a previous answer. This person states that this is a follow-up on my previous question as a request for can a large business be awarded DES contracts in the same CLIN as both a prime and also as an 8A mentor protege JV partner. And I'll repeat their question. Can a large business be awarded DES contracts in the same CLIN as both a prime and also as an 8A mentor protege JV partner?
Yes, it is possible that they can be awarded both a contract as both a large business prime and as an 8A.
Okay, and our next question, will under the DES, will small business proposals be evaluated competitively against unrestricted proposals within each CLIN?
Yes, that is the case.
All right, so Jeannie, I want to take a moment and go back to one of the questions you wanted to clarify. And that question, was it talking about a reserve? I know you had wanted to circle back and try to go back to another question, and I asked you to hold off just so that I could get in and get to some of the other questions first.
Okay, no, I can answer it now, Jean, if that's
sure,
okay.
Sure. Did you want me to try to find the question, or you have the statement that you'd like to make?
All right, why don't you go ahead and answer the question just to make sure I answer it correctly.
So can you
and
tell
completely.
Me, can you confirm that the question was on reserve in terms of the number of awards to reserve or how many awards will be reserved? Or a small business set-aside reserve?
Jean, I think the question was where a small business ranked in the DES ranking process and how that played out in the reserves. I think that
okay.
was the question.
All right. I'm trying to find here. I'm seeing questions about the number of small businesses that or how many will be reserved, if there's a percentage of task order awards that will be set aside for a small business. So I don't know if I can actually find the question that you guys are referencing. So why don't you state what you think the question was and then give them your answer.
I'm going to reiterate what we want everyone to understand.
Okay.
And I'll try to do this as simply and clearly as I can. The Jobs Act, Section 1331 of the Jobs Act, allows us to solicit and evaluate both large and small firms under the same solicitation. In the case of the DES procurement that we are applying this to, in this particular question that I'm trying to address, it allows us to evaluate both the large and the small firms together simultaneously. And 1331 allows us to reserve the right to award some of those awards, in this case multiple awards, to small businesses.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that clarification. We have had a few more questions come in. These are, again, mostly clarifying questions, getting into the competition and how things will be set aside between small businesses and large businesses. So this next one asks if you can clarify that the DES and RES CLIN awards are only full and open, but task orders could be small business set-asides. They go on to state that these types of small businesses would be only subcontractors to the awarded full and open CLIN contractors. Is this correct?
Okay, no, that is not correct. In this case, the full and open refers to both large and small contracts. It's full and open with the assumption that we have the ability to award some of those awards to small businesses as prime contractors at the contract level. Their confusion may come in when I say set aside in the next part, in the next sentence, which is at the task order level, that at that point we are allowed to set aside a specific project or task order for small business as a prime. I hope this clarifies. If it doesn't, come back again.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Jeannie. This next person states that the speaker has referred to small business goals as part of large business proposals. Will there only be goals, or will there be a small business participation plan requirement? So again, they say that the speakers have been referring to small business goals as part of large business proposals. Will there only be goals, or will there be a small business participation plan requirement that you enforce for those large businesses?
Okay. Typically, and in this case as well, we will have small business goals included in our solicitations, and the contractors will be required, the large businesses will be required to submit subcontracting plans in accordance with those small business goals that we put in there.
Okay. We have another participant that's looking at the level of effort for submitting proposals here, and they state that the submission of a proposal for RES suite contracts is a significant time and cost endeavor for a small business. It's a concern to them that it could be a wasted effort if none of the RES contracts are guaranteed to go to a small business. Can you provide any insight as to why there is no set-aside preference provided for small businesses that would provide the appearance of a more level playing field when they're competing against large businesses?
Okay. We do understand the situation and that's being presented here, and we do have an appreciation for that. However, the market research has not determined that there are at least two small businesses that can perform the majority of the statement of work requirements for RES or SO. Not for DES and RES.
Okay. Again, I'll just double check to see if we have any other outstanding questions here. And before we go ahead and close things out today, I'm just going to scroll through and see if there are any more that we have pulled into the queue to address here with the live audience. I believe that there was one follow-on question that came in that I'm trying to pull up with the RES CLIN, and this is a clarifying question where they state, for example, will the RES CLIN number 1 have a different selection board than the RES one, our selection board for CLIN number 2?
We are in the process of developing an answer to that question. We are not sure yet.
Okay. All right. So I think that we have gotten through the questions that we have flagged here for this live portion of the session. I know we have a bit more time available in the allotted period that we had set aside for today's webinar. So before we officially close things out today, I just want to circle everyone back to the reference materials which were shared as part of today's webinar for websites where people could go for additional information about the upcoming suites of contracts and proposals. So I want to ask our presenters if they can walk through these four URLs and explain to the audience exactly what they'll find and what they can do on these websites. And we'll wait to see if there are any other outstanding questions or comments that come in that we can address in the time that we have remaining. So perhaps Barb or Jeannie could talk about the FedBiz Ops website and what you'll find there.
Okay. Basically what you will find at each of these websites, the FedBiz opportunity is the government's entry point for all procurement opportunities, and that's open to all the federal agencies, not just EPA. So the vendor community can go there for all requirements. And the next three are all the specific websites where all the contract activities, solicitations, and questions and answers and that sort of thing will be posted for the individual solicitations.
Okay, so if people would like to remain updated on activity related to the RAF or the three suites, they can visit those particular websites. Will they receive email alerts when new information is posted on either of those websites?
No, I don't think they get automatically alerted to that, no.
Okay, so they'll just visit that website for latest information. We do have one additional question that came in here regarding, it looks like we do have a number of additional questions that have come in, and this one is regarding slide number 20. On slide 20, it references an issue request for SF-330s in June 2015. Can you clarify if this is the approximate time frame for the release of the DES solicitation?
Okay. According to the slide on slide 20, we're anticipating issuing the request for SF-330s on or about June, which is next month. On or about that time. That's as close as I can get right now.
Okay. Again, just a few more clarifying questions here. Can you confirm one last time that the DES and RES procurements are full and open competitions and that there will be no set-asides at the contract CLIN level for the DES and RES?
We can clarify that they will be full and open with reserves for small business. There will be no set aside at the contract level for small business.
All right, thank you. Our next question, if EPA plans to follow the fair opportunity process for task order awards under the RES, and if some task orders will be set aside for small business awards, will there not have to be two, if not three, small business contracts per CLIN to provide competition and a true fair opportunity award?
Can you repeat the question, please, Jean?
Absolutely. So they're just kind of following on with what you've just said, that if EPA is planning to follow the fair and opportunity process for task orders under the RES, and if some of these task orders will be set aside for small business awards, doesn't that mean that you're going to have two or three small business contracts per CLIN in order to provide that competition and a true fair opportunity award?
It is our intent to award small businesses under the reserve option that we've got, but we will reserve the right, no pun intended, to address this in writing at a later time.
Okay. And can you clarify what the difference is between a reserve and a set-aside? And again, that question is, what's the difference between a reserve and a set-aside?
Hello, this is Raul. The reserve allows the agency to reserve the right to make a determination, do we really want to do a set-aside or not. If I say it's a set-aside, I have to comply with whatever I'm saying I'm going to set aside. And that's why we're not telling you that it's 100% set-aside for RES or DES. We're reserving the right to make those contract awards and then we're subsequently reserving the right at the task order level to say what possibly will be set aside for small business, because the Jobs Act, pursuant to SBA's Jobs Act, allows us that flexibility for multiple award contracts.
Okay. Hopefully this one will be a slightly easier question. Will EPA be using FedConnect for these solicitations?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to circle back on, they're asking for clarification on a previous answer, and this participant is stating that they think they've heard two different answers on today's webinar, so they're just looking for clarification. They say that EPA is providing different answers on whether or not both JV partners need to be a small business for small business awards. Once it was stated that that was the case. On another occasion, it was stated that an 8A mentor protege JV partner, which could include a large business, can be awarded a small business set-aside contract. Which one is correct?
We will clarify that in writing with the follow-up to the webinar.
Okay. We have another question. In accordance with the Brooks Act, will EPA conduct oral interviews or require a contractor to submit a written response to interview questions?
I can say at this point in time, we intend to hold discussions with the highest ranked firms for DES. It will not necessarily be in the form of interviews as we have traditionally have.
Okay. All right, so I know that we are getting near the end of our scheduled time for today's webinar, and there are many questions that are still in the queue. I know that there were a few questions that have been read out loud, and the presenters have indicated that they will work on an offline response to the question. So I just wanted to circle back and provide a sort of final indicator for participants who were joining us for today's live broadcast. If their questions, if they have additional questions that were not addressed during today's live broadcast, presenters, how would you like them to handle those follow-on questions? Will you be working on some offline responses for some of these questions? Should they continue to stay on the FBO site to look for updated information? Should they reach out to you via your contact information on the homepage? And I know all of those options are available, so before I direct them to any one particular, I know in some cases you've indicated you will take some questions back and try to address them offline after today's live broadcast. But before we close out today, I just want to check with our presenters and see exactly how you would like the participants on today's session to direct any follow-on questions that they may have.
Okay, this is Jeannie. Sorry for the delay again.
Sure.
We do intend to answer the questions that have been posed today, and thank you very much for all of them. As I indicated before, they have been very helpful in the past, and we expect they will continue to be even as we move forward today. But we will be posting the answers to the questions, it's our intent to post them at the individual websites that we've cited on that last page as the questions pertain to each of those specific solicitations.
All right, excellent. So again, just circling back and reminding everyone that you have information that will be posted on the websites shown here. They're also available on the related URLs window. We have collected all of the submitted questions. Again, whether we have asked them out loud or we have left them in the queue, we do have those captured, and our presenters are hoping to work through those and try to get written responses for these questions and share them with the live audience. I want to thank the nearly 400 individuals who joined us for today's live broadcast. We did have a very large turnout for today's session. There were a number of requests from the live audience for lists of all of the participants, as well as the numbers and the businesses that were involved today. I will share those types of requests with the organizers, and again, as part of their follow-up to today's webinars and the questions, we'll work on getting responses to those types of questions. Today's session was recorded. You will automatically receive an email as soon as that recording is available for free replay and download. It usually takes us a few days to produce that. You're certainly welcome to forward that on to others out today. We do encourage your feedback regarding today's webinar. There will be a URL which will appear on the far right side of your screen under the related URLs window. It's labeled Seminar Feedback, so I would ask if you haven't done so to please take a moment and share your thoughts about today's webinar using that online submission form. If you shared the line with multiple people, each individual person can actually hop online and fill out their own feedback form. I do read each and every one of those submissions, so if you're looking for additional webinars to be offered this way, either on this particular topic or related topics, please use that seminar feedback form to share those thoughts with us so that we can continue to offer these types of sessions. Again, many thanks to that nearly 400-person live audience who joined us today and to all of the staff across EPA who helped contribute to today's session. I want to thank our three primary presenters today and hope that everybody found this to be a valuable expenditure of their time. This will be the formal conclusion for today's live broadcast.